Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 301 of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast, presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Hi, Adam.
How's it going?
Good. I feel like I said that really fast.
I think you're okay. I guess I'll find out when I edit this all together. Yeah. It is now just about the middle of January.
It is.
Wait, we're recording this on Wednesday because I'm about to do all my house things, and we haven't given you guys an update on weather in a while here. We experienced like a 40-degree swing in the last 24 hours, and it's...
I can't handle it.
It's a lot. I got my car washed yesterday morning. This is all my fault. I keep telling everyone this. I got my car washed, and then it proceeded to rain like crazy, and then turned into snow and wind. Just, it's one of those days where all I want to do is read, and I'm not getting my wish because it's a busy day. Yeah. That's okay. Before I die,
how you say that, like if it wasn't a busy day.
Yeah, just sit around and read. That's a really good point. People probably assume at Overdrive that's what we do. Like, oh, so if you're not like filling out spreadsheets or cards, I bet you're just reading all day. Like,
I mean, with audiobooks, kind of.
Audiobooks, but... that's kind of true. Yeah. And there's only so many things I can do with audiobooks.
Me too.
Joe and I both write a lot for the company. Can't do audiobooks with that.
I will say that in the past year since I switched teams, yes, my audiobook at work number has decreased.
Has dwindled. Yeah. That's okay. If you want to get a hold of us, how can they do all those things?
They can go to our website, professionalbooknerds.com. There you can get links to all of our social. We are on Twitter and Instagram at ProBookNerds. You can join our Viber community from there. And you can email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com.
Yes, you can. And I made Joe create a highlight for us on Instagram because we're not really good at like every episode talking about what you and I are reading. So if you're curious about what we've been reading all year long and we'll be reading, we're going to add to our Instagram story the books that we're reading. And then we'll save it as a highlight. So if you go to our Instagram page, you'll see a highlight of those. And you'll also see our 30-day book challenge stuff as well. Today's episode is an interview I did with Greer Hendricks and Sarah Pekkanen. They are the authors of An Anonymous Girl, which comes out, I want to say, tomorrow at time of release, because this will be a Monday. I'm all confused with days. Hilariously, when I was recording with them, I had the proper day, but I said the wrong thing, like, as a part of the intro to them, and they're both like, well, you actually said a few days before it comes out. I was like, well, people can go put it on hold and go pre-pub and pre-order it. You won't need to do that. This book's going to be absolutely everywhere.
Yes, I will.
It already is, like, one of the top-selling things in our marketplace. It's going to make so much. It's going to be everywhere. It's so good. It's like Gone Girl, Girl on the Train. Anything that has girl in it that's really good, this one is also along the same lines. But the way that they write is really interesting. They don't live in the same place. And it's a really good conversation. They talk all about the book. I don't like talking about the plot, like we said
right.
a couple of episodes ago, because I don't want to give away anything.
Yeah.
If you like thrillers and suspense type things, this is a really quick read.
Also,
because
there are two authors,
mm-hmm.
it counts towards the Professional Book Nerds Reading Challenge.
That is an incredible point. This is absolutely a collaboration. I didn't even think about that. Wow. Nice job, Jill.
Thanks. You're welcome.
If you guys haven't started our Reading Challenge yet, you can find that as well on our various social medias and our website. Just print it out or screen grab it, whatever you want to do. Anything else you think people should know about?
I don't think so.
Okay, awesome. Well, I loved this book. I loved this conversation, and I hope you guys will as well. So enjoy this interview with Sarah Pekkanen and Greer Hendricks on the Professional Book Nerds Podcast. Hi, everyone. It's Adam again, and today I am joined by both Greer Hendricks and Sarah Pekkanen, who are the best-selling co-authors of The Wife Between Us, which spent about 3 months on the New York Times bestsellers list and has been optioned by Amblin Entertainment. And their second thriller, An Anonymous Girl, will be released on January 19th, and I have to tell you both, I'm about two-thirds of the way through it, and I feel like I literally can't breathe while I'm reading each chapter, so I think that's a good thing. So Greer and Sarah, thank you guys for joining us today.
Thank you for having us. Just FYI, the book is actually January 8th. We're so excited, but it's in 3 weeks from today. So,
Oh, you're right, because that would be a Tuesday. Yeah, that I goofed. That's a publishing day. That's on me. Yeah, good point. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't want anyone to have to wait if they can get it sooner.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's just say this. As soon as people hear this, they should pre-order it so they can go, and it'll be waiting for them on the day it comes out.
Thank you.
So normally what I do is I have people start with talking about the book, and we'll get to that in just a second. But I do want to give a preface, everyone. All three of us are in different places, so you may hear us talk over each other just a little bit. But because you guys are writing these books together, can you maybe kick us off by telling us sort of how that relationship got started, you know, how you decided to co-author things, how you met, and all that good stuff?
Sure. Sarah, this is Greer. Should I take this one? Take it away. No. Okay. I was a book editor for 20 years, and Sarah was one of my authors. And we worked on 7 books together. And over our time together as author and editor, we discovered we had a number of uncanny similarities. So we had both played field hockey in high school. We were both the exact same age. We're both terrible cooks. We both had studied psychology and journalism. We both are really close to our brothers, who are both named Robert. So it was very strange. And then when I decided to leave corporate publishing, in the back of my mind, I wanted to write, but I wasn't really telling many people. But because Sarah and I had gotten so close, I confessed this desire to her. And she said, let's write a book together. Why not? Yeah, it was, you know, I knew Greer's reputation when I was playing around with the idea of writing a novel myself. And I knew, you know, she had edited a lot of authors I loved. And so when she decided to buy my first novel, it was fantastic. But what surprised me was that, you know, she was somebody I would have wanted to be friends with had we met in any other circumstances. We just hit it off. As Greer said, we began to have long dinners together. We really developed this close friendship. And when Greer was leaving corporate publishing, it was around the time that I was kind of thinking, you know, it would be fun to do something a little different. I'd written a lot of traditional women's fiction novels, which I loved. But in the back of my mind, I was itching to write a psychological thriller. And as it turned out, Greer had the same itch. So it kind of seemed predestined in a way.
So as we're discussing the fact that you guys are in two different places, the thing that really, really fascinates me is I've spoke with authors who have co-authored books before and interviewed a few, actually, although admittedly we were all in the same place. But you guys write your stories all together, but mostly while you're in different locations, correct?
I think we went into this partnership really impulsively and excitedly, and we hadn't really thought about the logistics because Sarah is right outside D.C. and I'm in Manhattan. So we were like, okay, we want to do this. And then the question was, well, how are we going to do this? This was a few years ago, and I feel sort of foolish admitting this, but I didn't know what Google Docs was or Google Hangouts, but my daughter, who was then 13, was like, well, here, Mom, there's this great technology, and you and Sarah can be in different cities looking at the same, you know, at different screens, but it's going to show the same material, and you guys can talk on the phone through your computers. So we joke that, you know, basically Google is the third partner in our relationship.
I mean, I know that, you know, writing together when both people are talented authors and talented writers, it can work. But I feel like something that has to be very unique, especially when you're writing kind of every single line together, is it seems like, you know, you have to be more than even copacetic. Like, you have to take your egos and check them at the door to understand, you know, if I say something about a line that's been written, it's not to be harsh. Like, I just feel like there has to be a certain type of relationship that you two appear to have to make this work as well as it does.
Definitely. I mean, I think it starts with the foundation of friendship and respect. But we do have occasional, you know, differences in just like, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? But it's never in a combative way. It's, you know, we always say there are no bad ideas. That's really important to us, that the other feels a sense of safety. You can throw out anything. and you know it'll be kind of considered by the other one. So there is that foundation as well. But we actually welcome the prospect of the collaboration and saying, one of us says, what about this? The other says, oh, and what about this piece? And so we kind of build this together. And it's definitely done in a, and we never argue. It's definitely much more a discussion of what would be better for the character. And if it doesn't work for one of us, we've agreed it doesn't work.
I'm curious, you know, even, you know, both of you being in, you know, the book world for so many years ahead of time, but this was such a new thing to take on with The Wife Between Us. You know, the second time around while you were writing An Anonymous Girl, did you feel more kind of confident that the process you were doing was going to work, or did you have a pretty good feeling about it the first time around that, you know, what you were writing was going to be successful?
When we started The Wife Between Us, I don't think either of us thought it was going to blow up the way that it did. I mean, it would have been, I think we thought we had a really, really good idea, and we were having a great time writing it, and we were really excited about it. But, you know, to have been on the bestseller list for so many weeks, and it's back on now in paperback, and to have it be option for film, I mean, this was like, I think, beyond our, you know, wildest expectations. You agree, Sarah?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, maybe not beyond our wildest. I think we did have kind of like the dream that every author has. Like, what if it did hit the bestseller list and stay there? And I think what surprised us was that we wrote the first act. We wrote about 140 pages and then a synopsis of the next two acts. And the book was sold that way, and it was optioned by Amblin, you know, on the basis of those pages and the outline, and then we started to hear it was being sold around the world. So that was thrilling. That was such a rush that day, just to be getting kind of mm-hmm. these calls that this is all happening, and, you know, it's so great to have each other to go through the good times with, as well as, you know, when we're kind of struggling with a scene or we're worried, you know, we've just written 50 pages, do they actually work? To have somebody be your business partner, your creative partner, you know, your sister from another mister is very rare. One person.
Yeah, true.
Okay, so I'm going to have one of you guys or both of you guys do a kind of a plot about An Anonymous Girl. Because like I said, I'm about two-thirds of the way through. I feel like I'm holding my breath every single page. And I'm also, this is very much a book where I am terrified to explain the plot because I don't want you both to say, Adam, you've given away too much. So are either of you or both of you good yet with kind of the elevator pitch for this book?
You do it, Sarah. You do it.
Oh, we sure are. You know, it's funny because we have the same kind of fear you do. We don't want to give away too much, but basically An Anonymous Girl is the story of a young woman who is struggling in New York, struggling to kind of make her way, carrying a lot on her shoulders. She has a lot of financial worries. And one day she learns about a study being given by a professor, and the topic of the study is ethics and morality. It seems very simple. It's a computerized study. You go, you answer some questions, you get a few $100, and you're done. So she enters the classroom and begins answering questions on a computer. Very quickly, it seems as though the questions are being tailored specifically for her, that the person on the other end asking them knows what she's thinking and knows what she's hiding. And then things start to get weird.
Yeah, weird's a good word to describe it. That's a good word. there's a lot of psychology in this book, a lot of, you know, analyzing people's answers and responses and expectations and things of that nature. I know that you both have a background in psychology, but do you, either of you or both of you, have sort of a background in this, like, ethical psychology? I'm just interested in this particular aspect of, you know, the mind and everything going on in this book.
Sorry, I had to switch my headset and missed part of that question. I'm sorry. My AirPods didn't cut out.
Yeah. I'll take it. So, neither of us had a specific background in, you know, ethical psychology. But as you mentioned, we're both keenly interested in psychology. We both studied it in college. Greer's mom was a therapist for many years. I actually did some studies, not so much psychological studies, but through NIH when I was in college to earn extra money. So we both bring to this a keen interest in psychology, and one of our favorite parts of the process is researching different studies. When we're not writing together during the workday, we are, you know, in between other things like driving kids around and, you know, cooking dinner and all that, we're texting each other. Here's an article. What do you think about this study? What do you think about this picture? Does this photograph look like Jessica? When we're together on tour, we're pointing out people on the street. Oh, Jess would wear that skirt. You know, Dr. Shields would do this. So I think it kind of springs more from a little bit of curiosity than our backgrounds.
Man, yeah, Dr. Shields has a lot. There's a lot to her. She has a lot of layers. I literally, I'm like so afraid to talk about the plot of this book. It's so good. But something I will say that I feel like I can kind of dance around is, you know, both in your first novel and in An Anonymous Girl, you guys seem to be fans of what's called like the Rashomon effect, where people have these different...
Yeah.
Okay, I was thinking I was on the right path there, but, you know, it's described as, you know, people have different interpretations of similar events. So what is it about that that sort of study and idea that you guys think plays so well into writing stories? Because clearly it does.
I think we just, again, it goes back to our interest in psychology. Like, we just are so intrigued by how, you know, different people perceive things in different ways and how kind of your time and memory affects even, you know, your own perceptions of something. If you ask your, you know, if you analyze an experience when you were, you know, 20, how it differs from when you're 40. And I think it's something that everybody can relate to. So one of the things we, even though our plots can be, you know, they're certainly dramatic, we always want to have relatable characters. And I think anyone can relate to being in, you know, an experience where you think something happened one way and someone else thinks it happened, you know, a different way. I mean, even Sarah and I were just talking earlier about, like, with lines in the book, one of us will say, oh, you wrote such a great line. This was so, you know, smart of you. And the other one will say, no, you wrote that line. So even in our own experiences, we, you know, will come across our different perceptions of how something has occurred.
I'm curious, because with both of your books, in them being psychological thrillers, I've obviously, people have compared them to Gone Girl and Girl on the Train and things of that nature. Did you do, you know, like any like kind of market research beginning, you know, while you're beginning this process? Because obviously, both of you being in the book world for so long, you know what's going to be popular and what's going to sell and things like that. But did you actively kind of search for specific book beats and things like that before you start writing these stories?
Yes and no. I think, you know, we pulled out books that we really loved. That was one of the first things we did. And so from our shelves, we were taking out books like, you know, Gone Girl and saying, you know, what about these books did we love? But in terms of like any kind of like, you know, calculation, oh, this is a popular genre, we should write that, I don't think it's possible to do that. I think you really have to write what you love and what you kind of need to write and what is going to engage you every day for 8-10 hours for a year and 400 pages, because if you don't have that passion for it, it's just going to feel false.
And then
agree.
Something else that I really noticed about the way that you write this is, it's almost like in Anonymous Girl, the chapters are kind of, to use an awful marketing term, they're like snackable. They're really short and they make you want to keep reading. I'm sorry. I know I hate that description. I couldn't help myself. But was that a specific, it's almost like you end each, like, you know, 5 to 7, sometimes even 2 to 3 pages on this little mini cliffhanger. Is that by design? Is that something that you do to keep readers continuing to want to turn the next page?
I mean, I think that was just the way that we each scene, we felt like we tend to write kind of short scenes. And so I think we just used the amount of time that we felt like was necessary. And we wanted it to be a page turner. And when we revise, we go through each chapter and say, is this the strongest opening line we can think of? And is this the strongest ending line we can think of? So we do want that, you know, that visceral, palpable tension to keep people to keep readers turning the pages, but I don't think we ever sat there and said, you know, 7 to 8 pages is the right, you know, amount for this particular chapter.
Well, I will say you do every single chapter, and those lines, I feel like every one of the lines at the end of each chapter, it's always like, you know, you'll be all mine, or like things where I'm just like, oh. Yeah.
You've got to say bum, bum, bum after the end of each one. That's the trick.
Honestly, you're joking, but that's absolutely true. That's exactly how I feel. Like, I feel like every single one of them is like the end of like an episode of True Blood or something, where it's like, it's all I can think of.
Hey.
So are these the types of books that you guys both read as well? Are you fans of psychological thrillers, or do you tend to read sort of all across all genres? I'm just curious, when you guys aren't writing, what you try to read.
Yeah, I think we both love to read. I think we do read a lot of psychological thrillers, but maybe not so much when we're in the thick of writing, because we want to be really careful that we don't, you know, sort of absorb somebody else's mm-hmm. voice. So we both read a ton, and we're always saying, oh, you got to read this book, you got to read, you know, this book. But yeah, I think it's probably, I definitely read a lot more fiction than nonfiction. Greer, would you say the same?
Yeah, but I feel like I read it probably a smidge more nonfiction than you do. But yeah, definitely more fiction. And I agree with Sarah too. We're just very wary of getting, you know, being either intimidated by someone's really terrific book, or just having it kind of like through osmosis affect us.
That makes sense. I'm curious, because I'm sure, Sarah, you know, writing prior, you know, by yourself, it, you know, that can be, I hear authors all the time say it can be a really lonely experience, and Greer, kind of the same thing when it comes to editing and being by yourself mm-hmm. so often. Does this feel like a much more, I mean, obviously it's more collaborative because you're not by yourself, mm-hmm. but does this process feel more enjoyable, I guess, just because you have another person to bounce ideas off of and work with, you know, every day?
100%. Yeah. I mean, you're right. It is very isolating to write on your own. And when we write together, it's not just the writing, it's the touring, it's, you know, looking at the cover and, you know, oh my gosh, you know, how do we feel about that? Like, we share moments together. Like, you know, when the bestseller lists come out, we're often on the phone together having a glass of wine, like, oh, are we going to be on there? You know, and we'll have a toast, you know, across the cities to each other. So that part of it is so much more fun. And the writing together too, we always say we're better together. We come up with things that seem greater than the sum of our parts when we're together.
Greer, are you able to sort of take off your previous editor hat when you guys, you know, if you send in a first or second draft of this and then you get notes back from an editor, are you able to kind of disassociate yourself from the previous version of what you used to do every day and not just say, no, we know what we're talking about, and actually take those notes? I'm just curious, this has to be a unique experience to someone who used to do all the editing and now you're on the other side of the table.
We have the best editor. She is so smart, and she doesn't edit the way that I did. We have very different styles in how we share, how we give our notes to authors. But she's fantastic, and I am extremely, extremely grateful to her. Both of us are extremely grateful to us, because she gives a fresh perspective and can come in. And no, I love being edited and hearing what she has to say. It's been really fun. I mean, I loved being an editor, but I love being on the other side way more. And in terms of, you know, I've never written alone, but I think some people have said, you miss going to an office? And I have Sarah, so it's not like I don't have, you know, all of those wonderful colleagues, but I just have Sarah every day to, like, you know, process about our days or talk about what's going on in the world, or just to not, to have someone, you know, by my side. Mm-hmm. Metaphorically.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you're together. Sometimes you guys are together.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's so interesting. Okay, so towards the end of our podcast, we like to do what we call the Nerd Nine. We have nine kind of lighthearted questions. It's usually, again, just one person, so they're a little bit more rapid fire, but I will ask them for you guys, and then, Greer, I'll have you answer first, unless you get mad, and you, then we can make Sarah answer them first. But the first one, the first one is just, what's the last book you guys finished reading?
Oh, we both just, my sister, The Serial Killer,
mm-hmm.
Which we picked up because of the provocative title, but we both couldn't put it down. We were just really swept up by the wry voice and the really fresh premise. I don't know if you've read it, but it's really good.
I have not, but a lot of people in our office have. I'm just laughing because you're answering for both of you. It's like you guys
I'm
are...
sorry.
No. No, it's perfect. It's because you guys both read it. It totally works. It's just funny. Like, you guys have kind of, you're like molding it. It's like my wife and I, we do that all the time because we've been like we're always together.
Yeah,
exactly. You're a hive mind at this point.
I think I didn't understand the game if I was supposed to answer the first question and then Sarah, but you're going to ask both the same questions?
Yeah, I'll ask you both the same.
Oh, God. Okay.
But it sounds like that was going to be the same answer for both of you.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what's your favorite place to read? And we'll say, Greer, you can go first.
My favorite place to read?
Yeah.
Probably in my cozy bed.
I was going to say the same, but what I will say is I love reading in unexpected places. And so, you know, that's one great thing about the Lydiac is that you can read anywhere, right? So if you're stuck waiting somewhere for half an hour, I love feeling like that time isn't wasted, that I can dive into a book then.
Listeners, I want you to know, I didn't tell them to do a Libby commercial, but they nailed it. That's amazing.
Well done, Sarah.
Yeah, good job. All right, Sarah, you can answer this one first. Do you remember the book that kind of made you fall in love with reading as a child?
Oh, gosh, so many. The Nancy Drew books, Little Women. I still have all my old Nancy Drew books. So those I loved. I would go up into my treehouse in the backyard and just devour them.
Greer, how about you?
Judy Bloom, and Harriet the Spy, which I still have my original tattered copy. I just sent Sarah actually a picture of it the other day because it had come up for something. So those are my great loves from when I was younger.
Awesome. All right, Greer, you first. What's one place you want to travel that you have not yet been to?
Ooh, good question. That I've not yet been to. Australia with
sure.
my family. Mm-hmm. I would love to go there. That would require a big chunk of time. So probably not going to happen in the near future, but that would be a great trip.
That's true. Sarah, how about you?
And I'm going to say Venice. Oh, mm. It just seems so romantic and beautiful. I would love to go there.
Nice. How about a favorite holiday for both of you guys? Sarah, you can go first.
Oh, favorite holiday. Let's say St. Patrick's Day. It's fun. You drink green beer. It's awesome. St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, my God. I'm just going to say, Sarah, that is my least favorite holiday. So we have found a huge difference between us. I hate St. Patrick's Day. Sorry.
Hilarious.
Sorry to anyone. I've probably offended a million people by saying that. Okay. My favorite holiday is Thanksgiving, for sure, because my family, we're always together with my brother's family and my parents and often my husband's family as well. Thanksgiving.
Okay. Yeah. Coffee or tea? I'm guessing, I can probably guess for both of you, but Greer?
Well, it's always coffee is first thing in the morning, and then I move on to tea. But I would say coffee if I have to pick coffee.
Okay. How about you, Sarah?
Yeah, I would say tea, especially at night. I love a good cup of herbal tea winding down reading.
See, I was going to guess you would both say tea because there's some tea things in the book, and I was just... okay, so cats or dogs then, because this is also something in the book. Oh. Sarah?
Dogs. I love both, but I just adopted a new rescue dog a couple weeks ago, and I've always been a dog lover.
Awesome. Greer, how about you?
Dog, 100%. I have two dogs. Actually, they're both out right now because we would never get through this podcast if they were here. They're so noisy.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. Mine also bark a lot. I have to record these all at our office. Okay, favorite food? Sarah.
Ooh, Thai food. Love Thai food.
Nice. How about you, Greer?
I would say Italian.
I was going to laugh if you were like corned beef, just something
no.
really.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm really not.
And then the last one of these, Guru, you can go first. If you could have dinner with one person, alive or dead, who would you pick?
Oh, this is so cliche, but I'm going to say Michelle Obama, because I just bought her book, and I think that would be really amazing.
Cool. I'll say Truman Capote. In Cold Blood really informed my direction in journalism, and I would love to pick his brain.
That is the first Truman Capote we've gotten. I like that. We've gotten more Michelle Obamas than Barack, I will say that. So it's... Mm. Not that it surprises me. I mean, as cool as Barack seems, Michelle just seems that much better. So I understand.
She's amazing.
Yeah. All right. I will let either of you guys answer this one. But last question for you. What do you hope readers take away from reading An Anonymous Girl?
Well, one thing I think we really aimed to do was to give the reader a really immersive experience where they felt like they were participating in these ethics and morality questions, you know, much like Jessica did. So I hope that they take away that kind of creepy, eerie feeling.
That's a perfect answer. Yeah, I would say that too. And just, you know, a great entertaining read that also makes you think long after you've finished the book.
That's perfect. Greer, Sarah, we're in three different places, but I feel like we made this work. Thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
Hi there. I'm Heather Drago.
And I'm Sarah Saunders.
We host the podcast, That's a Hard No, about saying no and setting boundaries.
So you can become that true and empowered you that this world needs. Saying no isn't just okay.
It's the key to living an authentic, fulfilling life.
I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor, so while this podcast is in no way a replacement for one-on-one therapy, I suppose I know what I'm talking about.
I'd say so. We talk about learning to say no and set healthy boundaries and how it impacts mental health, physical health, relationships, parenthood, and more.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit our website, hardnopodcast.com.
We're here to help you find your no and say it unapologetically.
That's a hard no.